Hey there, I'm Jeremy with Good Beer Matters. First, thank you for listening to the Good Beer Matters podcast, where we explore the craft and culture of beer. Second, I want to see the beer and hospitality industries improve so we can do a better job, make more money, and so guests can have exceptional experiences. Good Beer Matters is dedicated to the pros and enthusiasts in the beer industry because we are the ones who will make it better. To that end, I want to invite you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter where I share perspectives on beer, styles, pairing, and some practical beer education. Go to goodbeermatters.net to subscribe. My name is Jeremy, and this is Good Beer Matters.
We don't have a whole lot of cask breweries here in the U.S. It's kind of a dying thing, which is kind of unfortunate because that was the birth of beer.
At one point, you know, every homebrewer's dream, open up a brewery, right?
When you're doing cask, ingredient selection is key because you can't hide anything behind ice cold temperatures or high carbonation.
Sure, I'd love to take a trip to Britain, find a pub, and settle into an old wooden chair with a pint of real ale in my hand. But if you end up on the American West Coast, specifically in Central Oregon, that same UK experience is waiting for you. My next guests are keeping up with traditional ale and are here to remind us why it matters. A memorable experience is found where craft and culture collide. These are the stories of us. Of great food and the beer that brings it all together. For the craft and culture of beer, this is episode 123 of Good Beer Matters with Devin and Avara Roberts of Porter Brewing.
Well, welcome back to the Good Beer Matters podcast, everyone. I'm really, really, really stoked for this interview, like I am all of them. But this one is special because I happen to know these guests personally. I've spent time at their brewery having some great conversations, drinking their fantastic beer, and learning why the heck they have done things completely differently compared to the rest of the breweries in their area and in their country. But first of all, I want to welcome Devin and Avara Roberts from Porter Brewing in Oregon. Thank you so much for coming on to the Good Beer Matters podcast.
No, thanks for having us.
Yes, we're excited.
Well, you and I have spent lots of time talking and, you know, philosophizing about beer and business and family, and now we get to just kind of talk about just the beer. But real quick, so what is your background in beer? What is the origin story of you owning a brewery?
So I started out as a home brewer, and just wanted to take it a lot further than that and have a brewery, really. Background before that was a mechanic, and I guess body got tired of doing that. So had to figure something else to do, and brewing's a passion, so we figured why not give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, before we even got married, Devin was brewing in the garage. He started out just with the turkey fryer and the extract kit, and then went to all grain, and then ended up at one point building the
Brutus 10 system. Yeah, we all nerd out, you know, it's beer geeks. We just keep going.
The pots the pots kept getting larger and larger and larger.
And shinier. And shinier.
And Avara, you probably thought, I need to get me a lifetime supply of that.
Yeah. Right? And at one point, you know, every homebrewer's dream, open up a brewery, right? And we moved to Bend in 2016. And what better place to open up a brewery than in the beer mecca here in Central Oregon? And so we had talked for probably...
We looked into like 7 years before that.
Several years about opening up a brewery. And my background is in business. And it kind of got to the point where we had to make a decision because that in-between was really stressful. So it was, are we going to do it or are we not going to do it? And I remember asking you, I said, well, if we don't do it, if we don't go through with it, 30, 40 years from now, are you going to look back on your life and...
Drunk on the couch, like,
and,
man.
And regret not giving it a go. And he said, yes, I would regret it. And I said, well, you know, plain and simple, not so plain and simple, but there's our answers. So we at least try. And if we try and fail, then we don't look back on our life with regret. And so we went for it. And 5 years later, here we are.
So far, it's still working.
So, and you're still married.
And
the bills are paid. The children are, as of this point, still alive and well. And that's any parent's goal, is just to, you know, finish the day with the same number of kids you started with, right?
That's a whole nother conversation.
You know, beer and marriage and kids. So that's why and pretty much when you started brewery, but. Tell us about your brewery. You have a very, it's not the most unique brewery. There are other breweries that have some similarities to what you do, but not where you do it. Tell us about your brewery.
So we're an all cask brewery, which in the U.S. is a bit of a rarity. Over across the ocean, you know, in Europe and in the U.K., it's, I mean, that's just like going to any other tap room and getting a beer when you get a pint of cask. So we don't have a whole lot of cask breweries here in the U.S. It's kind of a dying thing, which is kind of unfortunate because that was the birth of beer. That's how it started. All beer was started in a cask. Even your lagers and over in Germany, everything was cask originally.
Yeah, and when we were discussing opening up a brewery, Central Oregon has so many wonderful breweries, and Ben does specifically. We didn't want to do more of the same. We wanted to offer something different and unique to the community. And
instead of another Northwest IPA.
Yeah. And we love cask ales, and we knew that there had to be a market and other people in the community that wanted more malt-forward, traditional ales.
Well, and it's also about keeping the history of beer alive, because it's historical, and it's dying, and if nobody does anything about it or produces it, it's just going to go away. Even over in the UK, it's phasing out because people are going towards your ice cold lagers, or even over there, the IPAs are kind of starting to ramp up a little bit more, and we're losing all that beer history, if you will.
And Devin does have English roots in his family, so it is a bit of a nod to his heritage.
Yeah. English and Scottish.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe that's why I love your brewery so much, because so do I. So, I've done I've had a podcast before with a representative from Camra, and Camra started in 1971, I think, and it was the campaign for real ale, it was to keep the old way of making beer alive and well. And you know, some people might think, well, you know, why are, you know, that's like trying to continue to roll Model A's off the assembly line because we need to respect our history as opposed to evolve to the type of vehicles we have today. But that's not an apples for apples conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean, all beer was made this way for forever until modern technology took over. Yeah. And it's not to say that that beer was bad and needed to evolve past it. Mm-hmm. It's still really good in its own right. Yeah. It's a different experience. And that's what I want to get to today, is it's still a legitimate, incredible experience.
And that's what cask ale is. Cask ale is more of an experience where your regular draft tap is just something to consume. It's not as much of an experience as it is when you get a proper pulled pint.
Yeah, and people come in, and there's a story behind it, and there's the history behind it, and there's a lot of education that happens when new customers come in that aren't familiar with cask ales and what they are and why we have them. And so I think all of that kind of goes into the experience, and even watching our team pull the pints with the beer engines, that helps create that whole experience when they come into the pub.
Hey there, it's me, Jeremy again. I forgot to mention that I also have a podcast with my dear friend, the incredible Julia Herz. Together, we've created the Sense of Beer Style podcast. It's the essential training for those who want to lead in food and beverage. We've created prepisodes to cover foundational beer knowledge, as well as Stylecast to walk you through each category of the 2021 BJCP Beer Style Guidelines.
If you work with beer as part of your job, then subscribe and listen so you can become an authority. Go to senseofbeerstyle.com to subscribe.
You know, and I kind of liken it, you know, for me, if I were to go into the average brewery and have the average beer, the average, you know, the same old commoditized IPA, for example, to me, that's walking into a hotel and looking and just to go look at the artwork in a corporate hotel.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, neat image, pretty colors, and I'm good. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's go into the next thing. Having a cask ale is like going into a museum and actually seeing Monet sitting there painting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work of art. It's an experience. I'm not a huge art buff, but I have been in certain museums around the world and just sat there and just and
taking it in,
flat out mesmerized just by mm-hmm. a painting. And I can't explain that experience. All I know is that experience happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, sitting in Madrid, watching, looking at Picasso's Guernica, you know, I've just sat there for 30 minutes just staring at this mm-hmm. thing, and it overtook me. That's kind of what, for me, cask ale is just you're immersing yourself into this sense of place and history and the sense of time, and it's still relevant today. That's a cool thing.
Well, you get to experience all the work the brewer actually put into the beer and developing that beer. You know, like with your regular draft tap, because it's so cold, it's so carbonated, you miss out on a lot of the flavors that are actually in that beer because of the incorrect serving.
And there's
four ales, you know.
There's something to be said about, you know, with beer, getting back to basics and tradition and culture, and you get that with mm-hmm. cask. And I think that that's something that you don't necessarily get with a lot of other just traditional beers.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You brought up a good point. And I think whenever we talk about cask ale, there's always a little bit of an elephant in the room. And so we need to point out that elephant. I forget who said this. I think it was, it might've been a British prime minister, you know, decades and decades ago that talked about, cask ale, real ale mm-hmm. is warm and flat.
Yeah.
But you know, anyone who's ever, I know, right. Collective eye roll. Luckily we're on video now for anyone who's watching, they can see the eye roll like, oh my God, he just went there. It is neither warm nor is it flat, but explain exactly what that is, because there's still a lot of people think it's warm and flat.
If it is warm and flat, we apologize. You've had bad cask.
Yeah. If people have experienced they're not going to have it warm or flat at any of our establishments, but if they've experienced it somewhere else in the past and it was warm and flat, that's not how it should be. But we've had plenty
now, granted,
people come in and talk about warm, flat beer.
Yeah. Yeah. And granted, you're not going to pull a cask ale from the bottom of a cooler, you know, full of ice, you know, I mean, it's not going to be that cold, but what does that actually mean?
50 to 55 degrees.
Yeah. So actual temp, 50 to 55 degrees is proper serving temperature for cask ale and actually quality ales in general. If you kind of look up at some of the guidelines for serving ales, 50 degrees actually hits pretty much all the ale styles for serving temperature, with the exception of barley wine. Barley wine is 60 to 65. A lot of people don't know. It's a lot warmer, actually, for barley wine. But your ales are all around 50 degrees, and your lagers are actually around 45. We here in the States even serve those too cold.
Yeah. Well, and just for a quick reference, anyone who's listening to this who does not exist on the Fahrenheit scale.
10 to 13.
So Celsius-wise, I was going to say 10 to 12, 10 to 13, mm-hmm. that's kind of what we want our cask ale at, right?
Yep.
So you know, I think of it as, you know, if you were sitting in the cooler having this beer, you don't need your winter coat, you just need a hoodie.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, because it's cold in there.
So it's still cold, it's just not freezing cold.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because we keep our cellar about sometimes, it depends on which location, anywhere from 45 to 48 degrees, depending on the location and kind of where the engines are situated, because they all run directly out of the cooler.
Yeah. How long? And now let's talk about the carbonation. The average beer that comes out of an average tap is somewhere between 2 to 2.5 volumes of CO2. Yeah. And if anyone listening or watching, if you don't understand what volumes of CO2 are, don't worry about it. We don't need to explain it in full depth, but the average is 2 to 2.5.
Yep.
What is cask ale?
So cask ale is 1.2 to 1.5. So it's not that much different, actually. I've been places where, and had a pint and been like, well, this isn't actually much cooler than the way I'm serving it, or not that much more carbonated either.
Yeah.
So casks have carbonation. Yeah. You know, when if it's been in service for a while, of course, the carbonation is quite a bit lower. But when it starts out, it's doing about 1.2 to 1.
But that's when it's getting warm and flat.
Exactly. And it should be cold.
And a lot of people come in that aren't familiar with cask, and they think that the beer's not carbonated at all. And so we explain to them there is carbonation in the beer. It's naturally carbonated. We don't add any additional CO2 to the beer.
And even natural carbonation, even if you carb up to like 2 to 2.5, the perception can be that it's in fact lower because the bubble's smaller.
Smaller carbonation.
You get a smaller bubble.
Yeah. Ooh, what a great topic. Let's dive into this real quick. This is a great little rabbit hole. So when I think about it, let's put this into perspective. So we mentioned the average beer is around 2 to 2.5 volumes of CO2. Soda can be anywhere from 3 to 4, if I remember right, but it's very aggressive and assertive. Champagne can be up there. But so that's just the quantity of carbonation.
Yeah.
But we need to talk about the quality of carbonation. The average soda pop out of a 2-liter bottle, that's assertive. But if you open up a bottle of really expensive French champagne, then, I mean, the quality of it is just like marshmallows, just kind of having a pillow fight with your tongue. You know,
it's a smaller bubble, a tighter bubble. It's totally different. And it's softer.
Yeah. You know,
it's not as harsh of a bite.
It's a very interesting experience, kind of getting a sense of, ooh, you know, the carbonation may be the same, but it feels different on my tongue. I remember the first time I experienced that and had that revelation, you know, the clouds part of angels sang. I was like, oh,
yeah,
it was super cool.
It's like we carb our bottles a lot higher than we carb our casks, but they still don't come across as being as highly carved as like if you'd got a forced carbonated beer in a bottle. Even though we carb those up to 2.5, depending on the beer, of course.
Yeah, well, and I got to use your Jack Pine IPA as an example for my other podcast project talking about beer styles and British IPAs. And that's where in the style guidelines, you know, the styles are based upon cask ale examples.
Yeah.
But bottled examples, they are going to tend to be sweeter, tend to be more carbonated. Yep. The same beer, but from bottle to cask, it's going to be a very different experience completely.
Less volume in there too, so the things age differently. You know, like a bottle's going to age a little bit faster than a cask is because there's just less in it. Or your hop profile is going to last a little longer in a bottle because it's sealed up a little bit better.
So it's not flat, it's effervescent, and it's not warm, it's cellar temp.
Yep.
It's cool. Mm-hmm. It's not cold. It's like the bottom of the ice chest, top of the ice chest, sitting in a cold room somewhere. It's probably the same temp you ideally want your red wine. It's somewhere in that ballpark.
Yep.
So it's not cold, but it's not warm either. So we got to geek out for a real minute, but I want to jump back up to real high level. To your knowledge, how many breweries in the U.S. are cask only?
I'm not 100% sure. I know I can think off the top of my head, I can think of two. One for sure, and that would be Machine House. I'm pretty sure Machine House they're all cask in Washington.
Is Machine House cask only?
I think so. I'm not 100% on that though. But then Yorkshire Square down towards LA, I know they do a lot of cask, but I don't.
What about Hogshead?
I don't know. I don't think Hogshead in Colorado is exclusively cask.
Yeah, and so this is an important point. There are a lot of breweries that
dabble
in cask ale, but that is a science. That is more importantly an art unto itself. Just to be a cellar person. For that type of thing is a very different skill set.
It's a lot more work.
So, It's a lot more work, as you can attest, because I think when you and I first met, you didn't have quite as much gravy as you do now. But...
yeah,
that's true,
Jim.
That's true.
But you know, who am I to talk? It's a different skill set, but there are some really great breweries that dabble,
yes.
And it's wonderful to try these beers that you know and love from the bottle, the can, the tap, and try them on cask.
Yeah.
And it's surreal to see the difference.
Yeah, like we did a collaboration with Ben Brewing, who we're right next to in our Ben location, and we did a
distance learning.
We did a kind of an old style English IPA, and aged it on oak to kind of give it that kind of old flavor. And we served it on cask, and they served it on draft. So it was kind of a fun experience.
Yeah.
So customers could go across the street,
walk back and forth,
have the same beer, but served two different ways.
Yeah, it was really
cool. It's the exact same beer. Yeah.
And so did you guys collaborate in telling each other, it's like, okay, taste this now, go down the street and go have another beer.
We would send people back and forth. Yeah, it was a good learning
experience.
That's
fantastic.
For people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They could.
That's fantastic.
Same beer, but you get different flavors. Yeah.
Kind of along that same note, there's not a lot of breweries who go all in on cask and cask only, but what about either beer competitions or, more importantly, beer festivals that celebrate cask beer? Where do you find those?
We've done one in Portland. We got from Away Days Brewing in Portland. I think they also partner with, if I remember right, the Toffee Club, which is a soccer bar in Portland. The owner's an English guy. That was a lot of fun, actually. We sent some beer up to them, and it was a pretty good festival. We missed this year's just because timing wasn't right. But there's
one in Oak Ridge.
I think they do a cask festival.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of them, just because there's not a lot of people that do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
They're hard to find.
Or when they do something weird with it.
And I think part of it is the consumers are no longer primed to seek out cask or to understand cask or to appreciate cask.
They just don't know because there's not enough.
An American only thing. I mean, cask ale struggles in England, hence why we have CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a fair question is, why the heck are you trying to preserve it? Why are you trying to go against the grain?
Because it's what I do. I just, I don't like being, you know.
Because nobody else is.
Nobody else is. Well, and that was the thing, is I was looking around when we were opening. I'm like, how come nobody's doing cask? You know, you can go to Deschutes once in a while and get a cask here and there. But nobody was doing it. Like,
and they do a good job. I gotta admit, they do a good job.
But I'm like, this is a beer forward town. You know, everybody loves beer. A lot of beer connoisseurs, and there's not nobody's doing real cask. I'm like, why not?
We like a good challenge. You know that, Jerry.
Yeah.
You have Monkless, and you have a few other places around town that really niche down and have something that they specialize in.
You have to in this market. You
and
have
that's
to.
What we wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You know, Bend didn't need another
IPA brewery.
They didn't need another sports pub.
Nope.
They didn't need any more IPAs. There's a huge market for that, and they do well here. But I feel like the town needed something different, and we wanted to
bring the forgotten back.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, and frankly, not just the town of Bend and the area of Central Oregon, the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire country, and I'd even by extension talk about the whole world. I mean, this is how beer used to be everywhere you went, and now it's hard to find, and it's a shame.
Yep. No, it really is, because it's a wonderful experience to get a really nice pint of cask.
And so you are trying to revive it and spread out that knowledge just because it's there. Same reason why they first started climbing Everest, because it's there.
It's there, yep.
Right? Why is that important to you?
It's just beer history. You know, I mean, I think especially in this day and age, we kind of steer away from our history and all that stuff and kind of just keep looking forward instead of remembering some of the things and the way we got to where we are and whatnot. And it's just, it's like wine, you know, wine hasn't changed in a really, really long time. So beer shouldn't be forced to change either. We should preserve some of that because you're missing out on a whole experience.
And I really think that you know, we've been on this whole kind of hoppy beer kick for so long. Not to say that you can't have hoppy cask ales, but
yeah.
You know, we really gravitate more towards the malt forward
and balance
and very traditional. And you know, I feel like somebody has to offer that, and so why not us?
Because there's a lot of people out there that still do like, you know, all those beer. There's hundreds of beer styles, you know, and it seems like lately all we're focusing on is pretty much one individual style, and that's the IPA. There's different variants of the IPA, but they're all still just an IPA. At the end of the day, it's an IPA.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of people in that say thank you because they like the other styles, but they drink the IPAs because that's all that's available.
And I also think that, you know, Devin's heritage was a bit of a driving force in doing what we do too.
Us Scots, we don't like being told what to do.
Yeah, there's a joke about that I can't say in the air because it would require a cuss word. But you know, but you probably get the punchline as it is. You know, for me, I think about these days, different generations or even non-generations, just the consumers. We want what's new. It's kind of bred into our mindset. We want something new. We want to constantly be dazzled with something new and shiny and exciting. But at some point, if I were to make a parallel to music, at some point we're kind of done listening to what's on the radio or streaming. And at some point we have to go back and listen to Led Zeppelin or Steve Miller Band or Ohio City Players or James Brown and go back to, for a lot of things,
to the root,
the source,
yeah, the source,
to the root, and go, oh yeah, that was has anyone listened to this stuff? This stuff is amazing. Because that will be the new thing, but it's not new. It was kind of where a lot of cool things began, was with those four bands and many, many others.
It influenced the industry. We wouldn't be where we're at today without those people. Kind of like with the cask, you know, without cask, we would not be where we're at today with beer.
Well, and I think you just confirmed what I was going to ask you is, do you feel like you were that source, that root, not you personally, but the beer that you brew, the style in which you brew it?
Yeah, I think it is. It's like, it's always good to get back to the roots and make beer to style, because, you know, there's a lot of experimental stuff out there and not a lot of two style beers anymore. And it's also a little bit more of a challenge, I think, in my own opinion, is to brew two style. Anybody can make a one-off, you know, there's no style guideline for it, but to make something to what was traditionally a beer style, it's a bit of a challenge to hit that nail, you know?
Do it again.
Yeah. And I think that people that are coming in to the pub are looking for traditional ales. They don't want, you know, the fruited this, the milkshake that. They want back to basics, traditional ales, beer that tastes like
beer. Yeah. Beer.
Yeah. And you know me, I love all beer.
Yes, same.
I love all beer, but there, you know, it's nice, this is not the first time I've said this. Beer's like a tool.
Yes.
There are times that I want a tool for the summertime and after mowing the lawn. I want something. Yeah, there are times I want something after the end of a long week on a Friday night when I'm not going anywhere. And then there are things that I want to just kind of revisit and reminisce.
Yeah.
And then there's the things that I want to challenge, my perceptions of what I think is true and well and good. But there are a lot of people who have never had cask beer. They've never had a bitter. They've never had a... They've had a brown ale. Maybe they've had a British nut brown, but they've never had a London style brown.
They're all different.
And maybe they had, just because some brewery slapped this category name on this can, but in a competition, it would not stand up to the style, because it's not, you can call it whatever you want, but it doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
What you guys are brewing is true to style, and it's a great example for people who want to go back and say, this is how it used to be. This is why we are where we are now, because of beers like this.
Yeah, we have a lot of like British Scottish customers that come in and they get a pint and they're like, this reminds us of home. This is exactly what I drink home, or tonight. Oh, this is better what I get at home. I'm like, well, I'm using all your ingredients. But yeah, it's it's exactly what it's supposed to be.
So you just brought this up. Talk about your process and where do you get your ingredients? Where do you get your equipment? How true to the British tradition are you?
So for like equipment wise, we got that from Stout Tanks. That's here in Oregon, from Portland. And of course they get their equipment built in China, just like a lot of other places do. But most of our casks, it's a mix. We have some from Ireland, we have some from England, some from France, some from China, because that's where a lot of that stuff's built. It all kind of varies. But as for ingredients-wise, yes, probably 97% of all of our ingredients come from the UK. And it's just because...
And why is that important?
It's because they're all heritage malts. They brewed with a very specific malt, like Maris Otter. Most people know what a Maris Otter, that's... it's a heritage malt. It has a very specific flavor profile. And when you're doing cask, ingredient selection is key, because you can't hide anything behind ice cold temperatures or high carbonation. So ingredients is like your number one. You have to really go above and beyond on your ingredient selection, because if it's not right, the beer's not going to taste good unless you ice it down and jacked carbonation up so you can hide some of those off flavors and it will not. Because I've done some of this stuff with American grain. It just doesn't come out the same.
Well, and that's the thing. There are a lot of great local places to source ingredients.
Mecca Grade, for one, is a local for us.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Seth and what he does over there, they're really great people and they do a fantastic job. But for what we do, it wouldn't be as authentic.
Yeah, because we're making English... Scottish style and Irish style beers. So, I mean, that's kind of like making a French dinner, but getting all your ingredients from the Hispanic Isle. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You're trying to make a really good stir fry, but you're using spaghetti noodles.
Yeah.
You got to use the right ingredients for the right meal, the right thing that you're
doing. To have it be authentic.
Right outcome, yeah. To be, if you're trying to go authentic.
It would be, it would be a lot cheaper. We could save a lot of money using...
Could still make a great beer.
American ingredients. Yeah. Still make a great beer. But for us, it's more important to have it be traditional and authentic.
Like your ESBs. I can't use an American hop, because American hops are generally more fruity. They're more piney. They're more citrusy. A little more tropical. Or your English hops, they're all earthy, spicy. They don't have a lot of those other citrusy kind of floral notes that we have here in the U.S. in our hops. So it wouldn't be an English-style beer anymore. Now it's an American-style beer because it has that American flavor profile.
And just because you brewed something... with the idea of I want to brew a strong British bitter.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to get whatever ingredients I can. I'm a home brewer. Let's say I grab, the basic ingredients from a local homebrew shop, but I want to brew a strong, strong bitter. I can slap that name on it all I want. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's
accurate. Style. Exactly. Or like another example. Yeah. You got all the great ingredients, but you used a Hefeweizen yeast. Well, it's not a bitter anymore. Flavor profile's not there.
Well, what about the equipment used in the bar, the beer engines themselves? Do I recall correctly that those are direct from England?
They're all from England. Yeah, there's a couple of I think there's one manufacturer here in the U.S. and the quality is just not the same. I mean, England's been making beer engines since, I don't know, they were England.
The ones here at the cellar all came out of old pubs in the UK, and some of them even squeak. We're like, see, super authentic. Yeah. They even squeak when you pull up.
And they last forever. You just put new seals in them. I mean, it's a pump.
Yeah.
You just rebuild them and put them back into service, which is kind of nice.
So So let's talk about this. So you have currently you have a brewery and a tap room, and then you also have kind of a pub, that which I love. It's like it reminds me of Cheers. You walk down the steps. Yeah. No one knows it's there unless you know it's there. You walk, which is good or bad. But you walk down the steps and you walk inside, and it's dark. There's leather. There's a brick wall. I just need some like wet wool and a fireplace to take me completely to England, and then we're there.
I know Ben would love to put a stove in,
Yeah, we need a stove and just like a wool shag carpet that you constantly keep wet and smelly, and it's like it's England.
Yep.
But as when people come in, so as someone who's never had cask ale before, doesn't know a lot about it, what would you tell them to expect when they step into your tap room and try cask ale for the first time?
Well, first I would like to ask them if they've had nitro, because that's most people have had a nitro beer. When they say no, then I'm like, oh, well, here, just try it. But if they've had nitro...
Well, welcome. We're going to have a big education day.
Yeah, because nitro is a simulation of cask. You can, when they pour nitro beer, it cascades in the glass. The carbonate, except for nitro, is flat. There's pretty much no carbonate, because on a nitro trap, it pushes the beer through a disc, which diffuses all the CO2 out of solution. That's why it cascades ahead. But a beer engine, it does that. It just does that. That's just the way it works. It cascades, and it makes this really nice, tight head, unless the cask has been low and it's low on carbonation, But yeah, I always go that route. If they've had nitro, I tell them, say, okay, well, it's going to be very similar to nitro, but it's just going to have a little bit more carbonation than what you use on a nitro tap.
And then I always talk to people about how it's really smooth, very palatable, really easy to drink.
Goes down fast, so it's like drink one and just wait for a minute.
You don't feel it's takes. Full while you're drinking it. We serve all of our pints. We have imperial 20-ounce imperial pint glasses. And that's for,
not a Euro pint, an imperial pint. There's a difference. Euro pint 16.9 American. And Imperial pint is 19.2 ounces American.
Yeah.
So true in true British style.
And that's for like the beer side of things, but there's also the energy and the atmosphere and that cozy feeling that you get when you walk downstairs and you come in and
you order that pint and they pull it and set it on the counter and you just watch it clear, because it'll cascade and it's all cloudy and then it just clears crystal clear.
When we were renovating this space in the basement here in Bend, we had a lot of time because we opened it during COVID. So we had lots of time to be very intentional about how we wanted the space to look and feel and what we wanted people to experience when they came into the pub, because we lucked out with opening this space where we're at with the original, our two exterior walls are lava rock and the building's 100 years old and there's beautiful wooden beams in the ceiling. And all of that lovely history of the space itself really, it lends itself to the feel and the vibe. And as we were talking about earlier, it creates that experience. Mm-hmm. Because I think if we were serving our beer, the cask ales in like
a gastropub,
a really bright and well lit,
same.
It wouldn't.
The big windows, mountain views. Right. It's like, that's a sunny day. That's not England.
So, we talk about the ingredients and having them be authentic, but also the feel of the space. We wanted to really feel authentic as well. And we have people come in all the time that say, whoa, you walk in and you feel like you've been transported across the pond. And every time I hear that, I'm like, yes, because that's what we worked so hard on.
Nailed it.
That was the intention, was to be like you're leaving Bend and you're going in. If you're walking down the, a street in London and you took a turn down an alley.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's down this door? This is what you would find. Like a little small alley pub. Yeah. Because pubs, over there, they're not big. They're not huge. Like they are here. You go into a sports bar or sports pub or anything like that. They're always massive there, 50 to 100 seats, TVs everywhere. And it's like, well, let's kind of get back to our roots and maybe talk to people.
I'm pretty confident that the few times I've been to Europe and see some buildings that were made like centuries ago, I'm absolutely convinced that people were half the size back then.
Oh, really? Yes.
I'm tall. I don't fit in Europe.
They were probably solid 5'1".
Yep. No, it's true. They're all small, and generally a lot of them don't have seats. It's all standing room only. You know, you just belly up to the bar and get your pint. But they don't have. I mean, not to say there isn't big ones there. There are some big mainstream pubs there, but it's
But that's smart, because if you fall down, then it's time to cut off Jerry. You know, that kind of solves itself, right? You know, I want to get back to that experience. Yeah. I want to put a pin in that just for a second. You guys brought up a really important point. I think we need to flesh out for anyone listening or watching who, if you don't know, you need to know. The nitro technology, was invented by Guinness right back somewhere in the 1950s. Because they wanted to mimic the cask ale experience. Yep. And so these days, for all of us who love our stout or whatever on nitro, they are trying to give you that cask ale experience. And they do a pretty darn good job, I gotta say. It's not perfect, but they use a different gas blend of 70% carbon dioxide, 30% nitro. Yeah. And it goes through a sparkler. Nitrogen releases from liquid immediately, and that's why you get that cascade effect. And then you've got that leftover carbonation to keep it carbonated, so it's not warm and flat. But if you want the true legit experience that nitro is trying to, nitro is like the Disneyland version of Pirates of the Caribbean, whereas the Caribbean back in the 1600s, whatever it is, that is what cask ale really is.
Yeah, it's a different experience.
So if anyone's never had cask but they love nitro, go find some cask. Yeah. That's where it all came from.
Yeah, get the full experience.
And there's a lot of people who don't know that little piece.
And that's why I'm sorry I wanted to interrupt this entire conversation and podcast just to throw that in there, because this is, I think that's important information that people need to appreciate. But getting back to the experience, you defined the experience that you wanted to create, and frankly, you nailed it. Because every time I go in there, I feel like I'm jolly old England. But you've also, not only do you have this space, not only do you have this beer and the beer engines, I mean, watching you guys pour a beer is an experience, because it's not like anything else.
And it's not something you can teach verbally.
No,
it's something, it's all feeling. You can't just tell somebody how to pull a pint.
You can explain it verbally, but you really got to get the feel for it.
And all the engines pull different. So it's like, you get used to, you're like, oh, this one does this one does that. But it's a feeling. You just got to get the feeling down. It's experience.
Well, and I'm going to put this on air to put the pressure on you guys. But next time I'm in the area, I need to stop by before you open so I can. Yeah. I've never pulled a beer engine. So so forgive me. I'm going to invite myself over to your pub to pour a beer. I'll pour you a beer for a change.
That sounds good to me.
put your feet up, Avari. You need to relax. But you've created this multi-faceted beer experience, and then you took it a step further. Last time I was there, you made me a delightful meat pie that you guys also make from scratch to really fill out the multi-sensory experience of being in England back in the day.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, and those are traditional hand-raised pies. So those aren't born in like a pie tin. You actually have to shape them up on a pie dolly and get them to stand up. They're cooked, not in anything, just on a tray. And and that's something that's dying over there too, because those are very labor-intensive to make.
They are. So let me tell you first that...
All the old ladies are the only ones still make them.
And me. So the pie team...
Different category.
Thank you, Jeremy. We have a four-person pie team. It's myself, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my mother-in-law's best friend. And so we do probably close to 200 pies a week at least.
All by hand.
All by hand. Yeah. And it is labor intensive, mm-hmm. but the authenticity of it yeah. and the love that goes into every single one of
those
pies.
That's why it tastes
pies,
so good.
You know?
Yes.
Love and swear words.
If we, only sometimes. I feel like if we didn't do it that way, they wouldn't be as good, mm-hmm. you know? And so we knew we wanted to have food here at the cellar. We had decided pretty early on that yeah. we wanted to do pies. We actually were going to partner with a local gal who ran her own pie business. And then yeah. for that didn't work out just because some state regulations.
Legalities, yeah.
And yeah. so Devin's mom was really a champion in this. And she, yeah. I knew it wasn't something, I don't have a background in food. I really didn't cook at all until I met Devin.
My mom was a baker. There's a long.
Okay.
It dates back to
the pressure was on.
Yeah, my great grandfather was a very well known baker in England.
Yeah, he baked for the Queen of England and Winston Churchill.
Wow. He did Elizabeth's wedding cake.
Yeah.
And Winston Churchill's 60th birthday cake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Long line of bakers.
Yeah. So, you know, Devin's mom really was like, no, we can do this. And I'm like, oh, okay. But she held my hand the whole way and made it happen. And so, you know, Devin and his mom and I have come up with all of the recipes that we have, and we have a lot of fun doing it. It's a fun time. And in the beginning we thought, you know, oh, we'll sell a few pies a day. We didn't really...
Maybe 30 pies a week.
We didn't think that we were going to be slinging pies, like, all day long. Yeah. And so that was kind of a fun surprise. Mm-hmm. But the pies go so well with the beer, and it helps create that whole experience.
Yeah.
You know, if we were, like, serving pizza, it would not be the same.
Well, and that's also one of the reasons we want to do the pies, because you can kind of go anywhere around town and everybody's menus are very, very similar. You know, everybody's kind of doing a lot of the same stuff.
Yep.
You can get food burgers options, and fries.
Pub food.
So we wanted to bring something totally different to the community.
That being said, you know, we did want like a fryers and the whole full gourmet kitchen so we could do the fish and chips.
And scotch eggs.
Oh, yes.
Shout out to Horse Brass for having the best mustard around.
And scotch eggs.
The mustard that you get with their scotch egg is just so good. Yeah. We're a small space here, so we just can't. I mean, it's so tiny.
Yeah. But to have a really good British bitter with those particularly kind of a malt balanced but slightly malt forward mm-hmm. beer with the British style hops, and that's a key ingredient in this, paired with a Scotch egg, is an incredible day. It's just like after that I'm like, I'm good, I'm gonna put my feet up, this is all I need. So real quick, with all the care that you guys put into creating these beers, these pies, this sensory experience, this sense of place. Mm-hmm. When you have someone that walks in and compares you to any other brewery down the street, those people who just don't get it, those people who just don't understand what they just walked into, I can only imagine there's a bit of disappointment, but what do you say to those people?
I actually think that early on there was that disappointment. And now I feel like, at least for me, I don't know about for you, but not so much. I feel like, you know, it's just not their place. And Catskill's not for everybody. And I think that that's something that, you know, we knew going into it. And so we knew there were going to be naysayers. We knew there were going to be people that were going to come in expecting, you know, an ice cold.
Pulled out of the freezer glass.
Beer or a lager. And that's just not what we do. It's not.
Oh, don't get me started on that. Sorry.
I just tell them like, oh, well, you're just not as much of a big of a beer connoisseur as you thought you were. Really? Because this is beer in its rawest form. I mean, this is beer.
Yeah.
You know?
So those people that walk in, do you have an IPA with Citra? I love Citra.
But
I can name a hop by name.
Yeah, and they don't even know what it is.
But you know what? What's happened before is we have gotten those people in. We've converted. Oh, yeah. We've converted many people to Cask, because there's been people that come in that, you know, oh, I only drink lagers, or oh, that, you know, and then we give them little samples of the beer, and the pint that they have on their table is the just-in-time stout, and they've never had a stout before in their lives, and
it's like,
you know,
Hobgoblin Brewery out of, you know, England. It's like, what's the matter, lager boy? Too much flavor for you?
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things I loved when I still worked in bars and restaurants, is you get someone like, oh, I just want a lager. It's like, you know, I just love lagers. It's like, great, that's
American
awesome.
Lagers.
Try this. Yeah. You know,
although something that we can't ever, you know, live down is that we don't have ice. And so
people are always appalled.
Like,
you don't have ice?
We're like a true British pub. We don't have ice. And so whenever people ask us for ice, we're like,
Just go outside, grab a handful of snow, if you need it that bad.
Pack it up.
So from your perspective, and granted, we've just kind of fleshed out what you do and why you do it and why it's so important to you. But given that perspective and that niche of what you're coming from, how do you define and how do you deliver a great beer experience?
Hmm. Yeah, so I think that first is making sure that the person knows a little bit what to expect. And so one of the first questions we ask people is, have you been in before? And if they haven't, we just give a brief history of what we're offering here and what we do and let them try a couple beers.
It'll catch them off guard.
We get a lot of people in that have no idea what Cask is, and they've never tried it before. They don't know what they want to drink. And so, you know, we usually ask, do you like light, dark, hoppy, malty, and kind of give them some options to go from there. And, you know, we have such we only have 8 beer engines, but we have such a variety
on
those engines.
Pretty big spectrum there.
Yeah. So you can pretty much find something for everyone. Yeah. And so I think that's how we do it with the beer. And then
even the lager guys, because we have a pale mild, and that's pretty much a lager version or an ale version of a lager. It's the lightest you can really go with it.
Yeah.
And I think that the general atmosphere is really relaxed and easygoing, and, you know, our team really contributes to that and helps set the vibe and set the tone.
Yeah, that's a big one. The beer tenders.
The pub. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't have TVs here. And I think we've told you before that was a very intentional decision that we made.
Yeah.
So that people can enjoy the company of.
Force them to talk.
Of their friends, their neighbors, the people at the bar. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a charming experience.
Especially because
because you guys, you're going to talk to each other. Here's a beer to get you started.
That's right. this is your icebreaker. Now you guys can start. I mean, there's times where the entire pub is just talking to each other and nobody has any clue who anybody is. They've never met any of those people before in their life, except for right there in that moment. And they're all laughing, having a great time.
You guys
time.
Had the whole pub playing Uno, one big game of Uno before.
It's like the whole entire pub was playing Uno. You know?
Yeah. Well, last time I was in, I had, I think I had a bitter and one of your meat pies. And there were some, they appeared to be out of Tanner's, but who knows. But they had never been in before. They didn't know much about, you know, meat pies or what it was clear that they didn't know what they stepped into.
That's all four.
And when I saw them walk in, I made sure I ordered my stuff right away, because, you know, it takes a while and I was on a timeline. And so, but because I ordered what appeared to be so confidently, the gal turned to me and said, oh, tell me about the pies. I was like, they're great. I'd never had one before, but knowing, mm-hmm. you guys and what you put into it, I had no doubts. And so it was just me and this group of people in the pub. And I turned around and said, what do you think of the pies? Like, oh, they're amazing. And that's one of the things I love. It's like, if you ever did put a TV, it's like, personally, I would be offended, but unless you're playing some British soccer matches on there, then be like, okay.
You have a projector for the special occasions.
For the special soccer game.
For special occasions.
You know, and especially if England's playing,
yeah.
you know,
So now we just need a double decker bus and an old red phone booth to go outside your new facility, and then all will be well.
Yeah.
So we did talk about cask ale, and what you're doing is kind of a form of art, especially compared to mainstream beer these days. But if it is a form of art, if it is a form of expression or, you know, a form of communication, what is it you guys are actually trying to say?
Drink good beer.
Yeah.
Just drink good, you know, and responsibly, because we make all our beer is lower in alcohol. It's a social. You know, it's not just to get, not the booze up.
The word community is coming to mind. Like, you know,
we're trying to develop a community space where everybody can kind of congregate, and just like they used to do in the old days. You know, they congregate. You know, you'd have the one drunk in the corner. We don't have the drunk because, you know, OLCC doesn't allow us to have that. we're missing. But they get the latest and greatest on kind of like what's going on in town, what Susie's doing. You know, I mean. It's a place to kind of just get the low down and make new friends.
And you think, you know, like how you mentioned cheers, not just like going down the stairs, but the community neighborhood vibe that you get when you come in.
That's what we're trying to get across through the beer, is that whole community.
And I really do think that because we're a small pub, our occupancy is like 33 or 35, something around there. Because we're a smaller pub, it really allows us to get up close and personal with everybody that comes in here. And people really have no choice but to chat with the person sitting next to them. And
And like with the beer, it's just trying to get more of the flavors to come out. You know, there's not.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this, you know, sometimes you go get a beer and you drink and you're like, okay, that was a good beer, but it didn't really do anything for you. Like it didn't spark memories. It didn't spark, you know, it didn't. You say, oh yeah, okay, that was like, you know, drinking a glass of water. It's a good beer. I'm done. I had somebody told me, it was old neighbor. I gave him a red ale, and he had a really good description of that red ale, because for what it did for him, because for me, it's a good beer. You know, I like it. It has all the flavor notes it's supposed to. But it sparked it painted a picture for him. He said drinking this red ale is like going down to the river. The sun's just coming up and it's just cresting over the river. You're starting to get that glisten across the water from the sun. There's a little bit of fog and steam starting to come off the river because everything's starting to warm up. The bugs are waking up. The birds are starting to chirp. He said that was what that beer did for him. It gave him that experience just from drinking that beer.
Was that Nate?
Cheers, Nate. But that's kind of what we're trying to paint pictures for people with beer. It's because there's so many flavors in there, so it's we can spark memories through flavors. That's a really big. You drink something, it brings you back to your childhood. So we're trying to, with all the, and serving it the way we do. You do get all of these different flavors that you wouldn't normally get pulling it directly out of the refrigerator or, you know, out of that ice cold tap. You just generate experiences, and there's no intentional experience behind that. It's just a tool for you to develop your own experience with and what it sparks for you.
And it can even be, and we've had people come in, but you know, when you're just like, You want the right beer. You don't even know what it is. You just want, you're craving the right beer. And you get that beer and you take that first sip and you're like, yep.
Like the world just got lifted off your shoulders.
That's exactly what I needed. And you didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. And that happens frequently.
It tastes like Friday at 5:01.
Yes.
On a Sunday morning, you know? That's exactly what it is. It's trying to just generate an experience. And it's not, there's no direction that we are really trying to point somebody in. It's
more than just the beer. Mm-hmm. It's more than just the beer here. It's the experience.
Yeah.
So at this point, we're running tight on time, but I want to get to our wind down questions. Mm-hmm. And so these are a little bit more philosophical and woo-woo. But but luckily, I have the benevolent virtual power to turn both of you into the king and the queen of the entire beer world for one day. So my question is, what would be the first thing you guys change?
Like Just in general?
For the beer, for the beer world.
For just the beer
wave
world.
Your magic wand.
I would put a beer engine in every single bar or pub, or whatever you want to call it, across the United States so that they could actually serve real cask ale.
Because
there's
good,
not a lot of, and with the correct fittings on it, because there's some around, we won't mention any names of any places, that do serve cask, but it's faux cask. If they're regular Sankey kegs hooked up to those beer engines, it's not a traditional cask. Whether that's a firkin or a pin, you know, a firkin is not a cask. A firkin is the unit of measurement. That's a whole.
Yeah.
But that's probably what I do. So that with the proper serving temperature and all that stuff, so that people can get that experience of having a proper cask beer.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the Queen, Your Royal Highness, do you have anything you would add to that?
I don't know. I think that was a really good.
Yeah, just.
I think that was a really good answer. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'd be right there with you, putting one in every bar and pub, give people that
experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so at the end of your royal day, the globe is going to fly you anywhere you want to go on Earth, and you can eat and drink whatever you want in this place. Where would you go, and what would you have?
That's a tough one. I would probably actually go to Scotland.
I knew you were going to say that.
I've been there before. I love it. I would like to go back, and I would probably go just. It would be a toss up between a really good scotch or some just really good Scottish ale. I mean, and as for food, yeah.
Well, you're the king. You could have both.
Right. Same time.
Can you guess where I would go?
I would probably have a meat pie, honestly. Scottish meat pies are, I mean, pretty basic, but, or a...
Where do you think I would go? Can you guess?
Probably Italy.
Italy. I would go to Italy because I haven't been and it's on my list. And I would try, so we have family in Fivizzano in a little village called Pognana. And they make, my mom's relatives there, my relatives, make some really good polenta that I would love to try that with some really good wine.
Some wine.
Yeah.
Well, and I would urge you to try, when you get a chance, the Belgian triple from Tréfontaine. Oh. Not a Belgian triple, sorry, not a Belgian. A monastic triple from Tréfontaine with little notes of eucalyptus in it with your polenta. But now I'm projecting.
Okay, when I go, I'm going to have you write that down and text it to me so that I make sure I can do that.
Yeah, well, it's near Rome. So, you know, if you're going to Italy, you got to go there.
Yeah.
Next big question for you guys is, why does good beer matter so much to you?
Life's too short to drink crappy beer.
Right? Yeah. That's...
Amen.
It really is. I mean, life is too short. And
We like good food.
I like a lot of good. I mean, variety is the spice of life. And I like good stuff. And I got no problem paying for it. As long as the quality's there. Good beer. I mean, it's too short to drink, and there's too many options out there to drink bad beer.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to the grocery store and they got aisles of beer now. You know, it's not what it was back in the old days where you didn't have too many options. There's so many options out there now, so you shouldn't have, and don't settle for bad beer.
And you never know what experience that beer is going to open up for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's still excellent. Good to, you know, grab a 40 of Oldie once in a while, or pick up that six pack of Mickey's just to remember what you don't want to go back to.
Just to remind you of when days were good.
We've come so far.
Yeah. So for anyone listening or watching, if they want to look you up online, or more importantly, visit you when they're in town, where can they go?
Yeah. So our website is porterbrewingco.com, and you can find both Porter Brewing, our Redmond Brew Pub, and the Cellar, our downtown Bend Pub, on there. We, in Redmond, we're 611 Northeast Jackpine. We're on the northeast side of town there. And in Bend, we're 206 Northwest Oregon. We're right downtown near Pine Tavern, below Silverado Jewelry.
Well, and I have to say, and I don't mind saying this in front of the billions of people that are likely watching and listening to this right now. Knock on wood. Oregon is one of those states that is known for its beer. Yeah. There are even the least of the breweries in Bend and the rest of Oregon are still pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Anywhere else.
Yeah.
Oregon goes along with incredible beer. And I do have to say, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your kilt. your brewery is among my favorite breweries in all of the Northwest, just because the beer is good. The beer is on point. And you know, I can have a beer from Deschutes or any of the breweries in Oregon, and it's like, yes, that is a good beer. I love this beer. I want to drink more of this beer. But your beer, your place, your pies, the whole experience takes me somewhere else, and that is the experience.
Mind vacation. That,
it's, and I've told people it is the cheapest trip to England you can take. unless you're already in England, then it'd be expensive. But I appreciate what you guys are putting forth and what you're doing. So anyone listening, watching, please go visit. Do you have any calls to action or final words of wisdom before we depart?
If you haven't tried Cask yet, give it a go.
Yep, give it a go.
Excellent, simple. Well, I already propped you up, so thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your version of the beer experience and why it's important and why it's still relevant today, even though it's harder to find. Hopefully, we can change that because the way that you make beer is the way it used to be,
yeah.
and the way it needs to be
spoil
again.
It anymore.
Well, luckily we can use technology to our advantage, but thank you for coming on and sharing the story.
Thanks for having us, Jeremy. Yeah. Good to see you.
I understand consumers don't want what's old. We want the new, and we want it now. Cask ale might seem a thing of the past, but it ought to be a thing of the future. It may be something our grandmothers and grandfathers drank, but frankly, I think granny and gramps were onto something. In the next episode, we head to Europe to learn about a beer-loving culture and a brewery owned by an entire nation. I'm on a virtual tour of the craft and culture of beer around the globe. I've put Good Beer Matters on video so I can take you along for the ride. If you know a person, a place, or a beer story that needs to be told, let me know. Meanwhile, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let your world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.